Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. The weather is mixed, but grass is flying, as are beef, sheep and milk prices. Shout out to our old supporters, AXA, Grassland Agro and ESB Networks for helping us to make this show happen. Let's hear from our specialists around the country as normal. To start, I have quick fire questions for Adam, Aidan and Darren. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, one quick fire in for you. Ask Adam, what would he do? My stock bull is tender on a back foot and was actually blowing hard the other day with snots when I saw him. I need him now as there are cows and heifers on heat every day. What's his advice?
Jack, I suppose the problem there is, right, if that bull was running a temperature, right, it's the semen is made like maybe 70 to 90 days before, you know, and a high temperature at this point could actually affect that bull on into July, maybe in terms of, and I'd be pulling them out, Jack. I wouldn't be taking a chance on them now in terms of, and I'd be AIing for a few days. And even at that, it's a risk even after that, to be honest. And look at it, definitely fertility testing him to make sure he's okay before he goes out again. I know that's 70 or 80 euros, but it's still well worth doing it just to make sure he's all right.
And as you say, Adam, that impact on the fertility mightn't happen for another month or 6 weeks.
No, and you need to watch the injections you're going in there with too, because they can affect fertility. Like, there's some painkiller injections there can affect the fertility of the bull right now. You can put them off straight away. So very, very dicey in terms of just managing that situation. You need to be very careful and look at AI or another bull maybe at the best of times. Yeah.
Brand, back to you in a minute. Darren, as two questions for you. What should my 40 kilo lambs be worth this week? I presume they're spring lambs, Darren.
Yeah, Jack, if they're fleshed, they could be sort of around 150 sort of 155 mark. If they're lacking flesh, Jack, back as low as 135 because they're essentially store lambs are feeding on. So there has been a bit of good demand at the moment for 43 to 47, 48 kilo lambs, because there's a good carcass trade. Agents want those lambs, particularly in the marts, and they're willing to pay more for them. Dim lambs are coming in nearly as much as a 50 or 52 kilo lamb. But there's the biggest variation in the market is for between 40 and 42 kilos, because there's such a variability in kilo percentage there.
Nice one. We'll touch on that again in a minute. Second question, Darren. When should early February lambs be weaned, or should they run on until they're fit for the factory?
Yep. If you're going directly by the book, Jack, they should be weaned. If he's average or median, say lambing date was the 1st of February, 14 weeks on from that would have been the start of this month. So that's, say, the book sort of, I suppose, target. Now, in an early lamb position, there's a few other things at play in this. If the lambs are being creep fed, there's less sort of a focus on grass quality or less pressure on it, them lambs could be grazing ahead of yours. Or if they're lowly stocked and there's plenty of grass there, some fellas might leave them run on and they keep pulling lambs away in that they won't be under the same pressure and that they won't get that setback from weaning, say, for 1% to 2% drop in kill out. So it all depends on the system, Jack. Like, I'd be saying any time now, sort of, he could be, but it depends if there's a lot of meal in the system. It's probably not having as big an implication as later as the season progresses.
I hear you. Okay, back to you in a minute, Darren. Aidan, two quick fires for you. Ask Aidan, is it okay to spread protected urea after lime?
So protected urea works the same way as can, so it is safe to use protected urea. You wouldn't use lime, Jack, you wouldn't use your ordinary urea or slurry after lime, but you can use protected.
Second question is close enough. Is it okay to cut silage even though I spread lime on this paddock 6 weeks ago?
So as Darren says, by the book, you know, you're supposed to wait 3 months. But like for me, I think it's safe enough, Jack. Look, it depends on the issue is the particles of lime could be sticking to the grass. And that then would affect, I suppose, the buffering capacity of, you know, the ensiling of the silage. Then, you know, the pH would be that bit higher and won't drop. So that's the risk. But if it was a low cover to spread the lime on, and, you know, 6 weeks with a lot of wind and rain in the meantime, you'd imagine that the lime would be gone off the grass at this stage. So I think it's worth taking the risk. Yeah.
Okay, 100%. Aidan, back to you in a minute. Adam, it's fair to say I was watching the mart bids there during the week last week, like a little butty whiteheads, 350, 370 kilos, making the guts of €1,000. Like, the mart trade is absolutely flying.
Unbelievable, Jack. In the last couple of days, it's really motored on, and you know, factories driving, they're not buying them, maybe them 350 kilo cattle, but those cattle up at 640, 700 kilos, they're really pushing on them. I seen Gortat Lay Friday night, 644 kilos at 2060 up the road to be slaughtered. You know, they need to be at 590, which if I walked into a factory this morning with them, I suppose you'd be up at, you know, 5, maybe 50, 560, maybe push 565. So you're still, you know, we said it last week, you're still 30, 40 cent ahead. And factories have no other choice at the moment. There's no cattle left in sheds and they've no other choice but to go to marts and pay big for cattle.
And are more of those Finnish type animals coming into marts than factories, Adam?
Yeah, I'd say people with small numbers are cutting on to the fact that factories are fighting it out for cattle. You know, the ball is really at the farmer's foot now in terms of, you know, over the last couple of days, quotes have actually been moving up by the day. It's really hard to predict. You know, farmers are ringing me saying, what's the base price today or whatever? And it's almost moving during the day in terms of going up. And you've seen a couple of turf wars emerging as well as regards a couple of the big players moving into each other's territory and people getting phone calls, maybe they didn't kill with a certain factory for a couple of years and getting phone calls. And other factories that they are killing at the moment ringing to say, don't you dare move away from me now in the next 6 weeks. I want your cattle and don't sell them without telling me. So look, that's good to see. And I'd say, Jack, I look at it, it'll be I know you'll come back and tell me I'm wrong, but I'd say you'll see €6 before the end of this month.
For the end of this month, because you've only 12 days to go. I mean, but it's
we've 2 Mondays left, we've 2 weeks left.
We'll remind you. I mean, it's fair to say it's moving by the day, Adam. Like, you know, you want to be really keeping a tight eye on it if you had a good bit of stock to move. Like,
unbelievable. And in terms of pricing around as well, Jack, you know, in terms of what's available on deals and weights. And I was talking to a farmer the other day, and obviously Meat Industry Ireland has lost that polystyrene tray that they talk about in terms of the size of the steak that needs to fit into that polystyrene tray, because there's not a word about that. I was talking to one guy this week, got 550 a kilo for 480 kilo bulls. They're into 2600 a piece in terms of, not a word about weight, just when can we have them, you know? So you look at cattle are in short supply. If we look to the UK, they're down 6%. If we look across Europe, they're down. Sort of every country in Europe is almost down in production. So that's obviously feeding into us. I suppose it's a wee bit frustrating again to look at that, you know, in spec, and that Ireland is supposed to be at the top of the pyramid in terms of premium product, but yet at the moment cows are almost making more than in spec heifers in March. So we're really trading on that lower value stuff at the moment. Look at it, they're a very good trade and it's great to see it, but we're obviously not, we'll say, getting into them, you know, what we'd like to be up at in terms of cows. We're probably one of the best countries in Europe for cows at the moment.
I mentioned mart bids there, Adam, and it's hard to believe that it's almost 2 years since the mart bids project got up and going, like, and we were trying to match up the video with the auctioneer and all the problems that were associated with that piece, setting up that whole job around mart bids.
unbelievable. Ross Graham Art this week, 2 years ago, Jack, we were down there, we'll say with our first sale and first animal sold. And look, it's been a great 2 years working with Mart. Hard to believe it's 2 years ago. I think the figure's up at €750 million worth of animals sold on Mart bids over the last 2 years, 1.2 million animals. And look at that, it's here to stay, Jack. There's no doubt about it. And in fairness to Mart, they took it on. And it's part and parcel now of trading in every Mart in the country, not just Mart bids Mart, you know. And, you know, we're seeing sort of 15, 20% of cattle traded online there every day a Mart starts up.
I mean, it was a very nervous time. Like, I mean, in fairness to the staff in these marts, like, I mean, they didn't know if it was going to work. They were trying to, you know, they had these cattle in the sheds, and they didn't know if they were going to be able to sell them, and people didn't know if they were going to be able to buy them. Like, it was a very anxious time for the trade, wasn't it?
Absolutely. It's hard to remember back to that now, but there was a huge worry around cattle trade and will the cattle trade fall off and how are we going to cope with this? But in fairness to Mart, they deserve huge credit. And look, I remember Michael Harty sitting down with him this day 2 years ago, you know, in terms of looking at what we're going to do here and how this is going to work. And look at the huge faith, I suppose, in everybody too, and trust in everybody that people had the system there to do it, and that farmers as well would cotton on to, you know, using iPads. And look, we've all seen the pictures now, 80 and 90 old people sitting in kitchens, you know, buying away cattle. And we've seen, you know, the big agents this week, you know, one guy there has five screens in front of him and he's working off five marts at the one time in terms of trying to hoover up Anton that's finished. And especially in a time when cattle are scarce, you know, if Anton over 600 kilos for a next day kill, you don't need to give that animal a real good once over, you know. If it's going to be killed tomorrow, if it's able to walk, you know, it'll be all right.
I mean, Israel is in the news headlines. Adam, it's not for crooked regions now. This is for the high-end continental wheelings.
Yeah, so we had a number of buyers over in January visiting some yards across the country, visited ports, visited quarantine centres, and we're just almost there now in terms of loading the first ship to head to Israel. Very important market, Jack, really growing. 9.6 million people over there. They imported 300,000 cattle in 2021. It's a real growing market. And yeah, as I said, it's for good quality weanlings. It's I won't say top end, but it's for good, you know, continental, good quality 300 to 400 kilo weanlings. Very, very important for the weanlings trade to underpin that. And look, live exports in general is going very well. We're up 12% year on year. The Netherlands, I suppose, is driving that. We're up 40,000 calves back into the Netherlands. You know, Roseville is back in foe again across Europe. You know, manufacturing trade, food service trade back to full swing again. So live exports. Libya as well, up 7,500 head, you know, up 47% on 2021. We could do 20,000 cattle to Libya this year, which would be a record to one of those countries.
It's interesting that the veal piece being up, especially when milk powder prices are high as well, Adam. You know, usually when milk powder prices are high, the margin for them guys is a little bit lower. Like, but they're obviously getting it back from the market, those in the veal game.
Yeah, it seems to be pretty positive, and in terms of numbers are pretty tight as well over there, so that has led them back to Ireland. The only negative in all that export piece is Northern Ireland. I suppose we're down, we've half the number of cattle exported for the first 4 months in Northern Ireland. They just can't compete with our prices down here at the moment, and we've seen less demand, but that calf thing is definitely, you know, very, very positive, and hopefully we'll see the weanland trade now with these countries. Like, you've also Bord Bia are in Morocco this week visiting some customers there in terms of potential market for weanlands, and I know Jordan, we've done 4,000 bulls to Jordan as well, and there's a ship on its way back from Jordan at the moment for another load. So yeah, exporters are finding it actually difficult to source those Frisian bulls at the moment out there in terms of getting another load. You need 2,000 for a load, and they're actually getting it hard at the moment to source those bulls.
I mean, you would expect, Adam, as this Ukraine piece continues and as the food security issue becomes an even bigger problem, like, you would expect those African countries and those countries like you mentioned, like, that they'll come under more pressure for animals, for meat protein, effectively, like.
Yeah, there could be a bit of that, Jack, in terms of food security and these people looking ahead. And I know, speaking to a couple of exporters over the last sort of 2 weeks, they're very, very busy in terms of answering phone calls from that North African market and across into Israel, Egypt, Jordan, around that neck of the woods, in terms of there's big appetite there for cattle coming forward. And they're going in on a grain diet, so you'd really question in terms of, you know, grain is going to be scarce in those countries as well, because they would have depended on Ukraine and Russia to come in there with grain. So look, they obviously have confidence in the market because, as I said, they're looking for those weanlings at the moment.
And the fact that India now have banned exports of wheat will put even probably more pressure on some of those countries again in terms of, as you say, a feed source for those animals. Adam, you got back from Balmoral, all right. I see that the minister is actually pumping more money into shows, is he?
Yeah, super. 50,000 we'll say announced a funding, five-year project announced this week. Really, really positive move for shows. This is a heifer class. Now there's some people who like this and some people who won't, but it's a combination of genetics and looks in the show ring. It's a 4 or 5 star genotyped heifer, traditional breed heifer and a continental heifer. So there's two different classes there. And basically that it's going round to all shows in the country. It's going to work out, I think, 500 or 600 euros in prize money for every show. So it's going to bring out those sort of 4 and 5 star genotyped heifers between 12 and 24 months. Look, it's a real positive move. It's a big clap on the back for shows and possibly the future of shows in terms of investing in them. That's what we need. They need sponsorship. Some of them have struggled for sponsorship for this year because it's been a 3-year wait, but this is a big vote of confidence for them.
And the objective behind the department or the minister getting involved, Adam, is that just to kind of highlight the type of genetics, we'll say, that's wanted for those early maturing breeds, or what's the story?
You were going to say EBI there, but we'd be as far away from EBI as we can be. in the show ring. No. It's, I suppose, a combination of both. Yeah, like people have this idea maybe out there that, you know, the show heifer can't be a 4 or 5 star heifer, but actually there is loads of heifers out there that are very good to look at and also have the genetics in them to be very good replacements. And I suppose it's a little bit of a help to shows as well to get back up and going again in this year and for the next couple of years. As I said, it's a 5-year program.
You're organising young handler training up in Cavan, are you?
We are. That's the next generation of showing. The Virginia Show Society, in fairness, have great foresight there. Come together with a number of breed societies to put on a day on Sunday, the 29th of May. And we'll say young people come in. There's a couple of the professional cattle fitter, Alan Shaw, coming in to clip and do up animals. The Tara Fitzsimons from Chagas to talk about future education and agriculture and careers in agriculture. The John Smith and Catherine Smith, local sort of handlers there to teach ring craft, of all things, as to how you tips and tricks for when you're walking around the ring. So look at it, for young people, it's from the age of 10 to 22. So look at it, it should be a really positive day. We're up there ourselves giving a bit of a chat on taking some photos on social media and stuff in terms of promoting yourself and promoting your animals.
Adam, any big happening in Tullamore Farm? Like, was there, has breeding started yet there?
Yeah, no, he's breeding away. Breeding's going really, really well, actually. He's a lot of the heifers. I don't just have the exact figures, but he's a lot of the heifers bred. We're almost ready to, I'd say, go in with a bull there on the heifers now in terms of he's almost through sort of 5 weeks of AI in the heifers. And cows coming into heat really, really strong as well. Grass supply is good. You know, there's no real issue down there. We're just getting the yard sort of ready. He's back in the yard, tidying up the yard. Obviously, the open day is the 26th of July, so it's all hands on deck for the next couple of weeks down there to plan that out and to you know, make sure that everything is looking shipshape for the 26th of July.
Okay, rock and roll. Thanks, Adam. Chat to you next week. Darren, staying with Tullamore Farm, like in terms of the sheep side of things down there, like is that on track, I suppose, or what's happening there at the moment?
Yeah, Jack, you're on track. Sure, he's looking at, say, 40-day waits now to see how the lambs are performing. Did that there a while back. We'll go through them next week. He still has a few more to weigh, so it'll be something for us to have a look at, to see how lambs are doing, and a matter of iris dose and blowfly protection as well. Okay. So I suppose they're the things that he's got on top of. Niggling sort of bits of scald and that, Jack, and I think that's happening right across the country, and footpath in there as well, which is difficult to try and get lambs set up on. But not any sort of major problems yet that he needs to, say, do too much out of the ordinary.
Okay, yeah, I've heard my local buddy here, in terms of lameness, he was on again. Like it's kind of heartbreaking to see these young lambs crippled over, Darren, in terms of lameness. Like after kind of keeping them going right through kind of, let's say, February and March, and next thing then you get to May when they're nearly creaming off, and they get crippled over with lame, and like they can melt, you know.
Jack, they can melt big time, like, and it does have a big impact. And like, you would wonder when you turn them up and you see that there's a small bit of scar, like, but yeah. I suppose it's the pain threshold, or it's, I suppose, the you have been used to it, and it's so tender, yeah. Like foot batting is the Rolls Royce treatment, but for a lot of people with lambs, it's hard to get in and do it. And even spot treatment with a spray, like turn them up and put a spray, it will keep on top of it. The secret is keeping on top of it early, because that spreads so easy. Like, and particularly this time of year, when you go from wet to dry and maybe stimmy grass to lush grass, it definitely has an impact. Like,
and like, Darren, is that the bit, like, there's no point in kind of pulling them out, keeping them inside for a day or two, rent like that? You can't really do that, can you? Like,
see, it's very hard, like, because you go pulling them out, and with the best will in the world, even fellas that have numbers in yours, numbers on lambs,
yeah,
like, it's you're taking them out. I mean, look at and that's, sorry, I should say that if you could do that, Jack, it'd be a great help in solving the problem, like, in segregating this and stopping this from, say, spreading, like. But scald comes in and spreads quickly, like, and it's just about trying to get on top of it. Like it's, for me, to pull it out, like, if you had them in a yard, see, part of the problem is when you bring lambs into the yard, it's hard to see, and unless you can go in and foot bat them all, which it can work very well, but even, say, having a mobile foot bat or putting them in for a while, or some fellas will make up a bit of bluestone or a zinc sulfate in a tub and bring it out to the field, and instead of putting on spray, they'll dip the animal's foot in it or try and make up a bit of a paste. Look, there's all different type of options, none of them simple with scald, and that's the issue, is you're dealing with young lambs and it's not hard. Like, it will be, I suppose, the catalyst for some fellas to say, right, now I need to get the foot bat going and I need to set it up and get them moving through it. And that's something that works okay too, and that if you could set it up that when animals are moving through paddocks and that, it does help. But it's not simple no matter what way you do it at this time of the year.
Talk to me, we've enough done on lambs. Talk to me about blowfly protection. Are lads dipping yet, or what's the crack in terms of protection from blowfly?
Yeah, like, I'd say there's probably very few fellas using dipping now as a protection. And we've seen the sort of the pour-ons nearly dominate the early season market. And, like, every year, I'll invariably get calls from fellas that say, I never use and dip again. The dips are no use, or but they might dip now, and it might be 7-8 weeks later before, say, the issues have hit her. And like, that's part and parcel, I suppose, of maybe the bad thoughts on dip. But, like, dip provides protection up to 35 days. Now, that's up to 35. If you have a lot of rain, a lot of heat, dirty fleeces, that could be 4 weeks. Like, so what a lot of people are doing, Jack, now is coming in first with a pour on, and then later on in the season using your dipping product. Yeah. And, like, for most people, all you have to be concerned about is blowfly protection. And lads are either coming in and they're using the Click product or something, say the Ectofly product. But for fellas in hill and more marginal ground, we've seen in recent years that there has been, I suppose, the infestation of ticks and tick-borne illnesses have hit earlier and earlier and earlier. And that's reflected in that May is the, say, public awareness month for Lyme disease, which is a very important and can be a debilitating enough disease for if people get it. So, that also shows that, look, there's issues in lambs as well at this stage of the year. Like, and I've even talked to fellas in the last week that said, look, they'll turn up lambs on a weekly basis this time of the year just to monitor what the infestations are like. And that once they see a lot of ticks, that they'll come in and treat, or that they'll come in routinely now and treat beforehand and try and balance getting as long a blowfly protection, but also get protection from ticks. And, like, probably the best product on the market for that is Young's Vector, because it treats and prevents ticks and also has good, say, protection against blowfly strike as well. Like, so that's probably what a lot of the farmers are using in those areas.
Yeah, you've a decent focus there this week on sheep handling, dipping, tagging, like all the jobs that are being done on sheep farms, I suppose, right around the country.
Yeah, and look, a lot of people will say that, Ginny, you wheeled out the table again in pouring products, but equally, fellas, I say, Ginny, it's a grand sort of table to have of all the products available, the withdrawal dates, what they cover, what they don't cover, because, like, if we look at, say, even the Click products, Click Extra and Click, they're given protection of up to 16 or 19 weeks, but they don't treat an established strike, and also the withdrawal dates are up in 40 days. Like, so there's little nuances there that people have to remind themselves of and have to be familiar with just to get things right. Because, like, the last thing you could look at solely on cost, but you need to weigh up and see what's the best product in regards the linter protection, say the amount of treatments it covers. And like one thing I often say to people is that you'll often hear a fella saying this Gini Thick has gone up in price and I'll wait as long as I can. And sometimes it can be a false economy, because if you come in now and treat lighter lambs, you might still get the protection you want, and it's a less of a treatment per, say, less volume per head.
Smaller animal, might, like, yeah.
Exactly, and it works out the same. Like, so it's it's about sitting down, looking at stable and seeing, right, what do I need to do for this year?
Yeah, I know, good reference product. Darren, in terms of lamb prices, we touched off it in the quickfire job. Like, I mean, what are they running at in general, as you say, for that kind of, that factory lamb, I'll say, which is predominantly what we have. Although, like we talked about last week, there's plenty of those big singles that are coming in as almost as butcher lambs at this stage.
There is, Jack, and there's still plenty of hoggets. Like, it's funny, there's, like, if we look at last week's kill, there was 23,500 hoggets and there was 19,000 lambs. Now, I think this will be the first week this week that we'll tilt that balance and that you'll have lambs passing out hoggets. But yes, hoggets are still very important. But if we look at lambs, like we've seen Kildare Chillen continuing to lead the pace, up another 10 cents. So their base course is 8.10 plus 10 cents. So if you're a quality assured farmer going into Kildare without any negotiating, you're getting 8.20, whereas other factories are 7.90 to 7.95. So you have to negotiate from there on. But in general, all factories are paying over 8.10 per kilo for, say, spring lambs. Then you have the deals with producer groups, regular sellers up to 8.30. And I've heard plenty of reports this week, Jack. Now, when I say plenty, not massive, it's still at the, I suppose, the more occasional side of things, but of 8.35 and 8.40 being paid for the fellas that are supplying big numbers of hoggets, big numbers of spring lambs, and they have that sort of touch. The big movement in last week has been in hoggets. There's plants that, say, brought the hoggets courts back to 690, 695, even recent weeks, and they had sort of had told producers of smaller numbers, look, we're focusing on spring lambs, but yet we're giving 730, 740 to the big feeders, are so keen now for them numbers, and the competition is such that they have increased quotes anywhere by 20, 25 cents. Now, they haven't done it in a big official way, but producer groups are back up to sort of 720, 730. And the regular sellers are the traditional sort of specialist finishers handling the numbers in the 70s, 80s, 100s in batches. They are still 740, 750. And like, it looks like demand is going to be good there. Like, a farmer asked me this week, Jack, you know, lambs must have dried up an awful lot. There's a bit of supply is getting tighter, but also demand being good, because the kill is 50,000, which is, or 49,000, which is, it's a good kill, but it shows the strength of demand that's there in the market.
Yeah, no. Darren, it's probably a touch early, is it, for wool and for shear and et cetera, and especially with the weather mixed the way it is, there's probably maybe not a whole lot going on just yet. Like, are wool markets up or down, or where are they?
They're only, as you say, it is probably a touch early, and they were probably about a couple of weeks ahead of, say, the quotes down here. So I talk, say, to Vincent Pierce, I have a piece with him around, say, wool insulation. So they're doing that product. But he said this, the latest lockdown in China couldn't have come at the worst possible time, because things were just starting to show signs of opening up again. And that lockdown just shut off the market again. And like he said, as it stands at the moment, he's looking at sort of 5-10 cents for Scotch wool, 20 cents for Lowland wool, which is where I was at last year. Ulster Wool came out and they put out a market forecast. They're looking at a more positive market, but yet there's nothing sort of concrete on it. Now, they have given information about the prices they're paying for last season's wool, and there was an awful lot of talk this time last year, because they would have always paid, say, an upfront payment and then a top-up depending on what the price was throughout the year. Their prices came in as an average of 36 pence a kilo. Now, fellas here will look at that and say, Ginny, are we being fleeced down here? Pardon the pun. But there's a lot of considerations around packing, around grading, all that type of thing. And then, look, there's a little niche bit inside in the focus, Jack, and there's 250 a kilo for wool of sheep native to my own county, and that the Galway breed have signed up a deal with Donegal Yarn and with Woolo, and that their 5,000 tons of wool small volumes in the overall market, but for people that have that sheep, they're getting 250 from the say the buyer. There will be some bit of a say deduction for market and processing and that, but it's a little niche to stay as well and shows what's available.
Yeah, no, nice one. We might come back on the wool and the whole issues around composting and all that kind of thing, or the insulation piece. We might touch off that in depth at when things kind of warm up a little bit. Darren, listen, we'll leave it there at that for this week, and we'll talk again next week. Aidan, your guys must be nearly getting the feet up at this stage, are they? Like we're striking on for the end of May. You must have Malbec calf.
Sure, there's a fair few farmers now are talking about letting out bulls earlier than normal, Jack, this year. And I know we discussed it in the show previously, but talking to most dairy farmers now, they're still busy enough, Jack. Like, you know, we're still only 3 or 4 weeks into two to four weeks, I suppose, into breeding. And look, it's the first busy time of year, you know. So again, it's stressful because having cows will calve themselves no matter what you do, but you have to get them in calf, like, and that's where the hard work is. And after 3 or 4 weeks, farmers do get tired, you know. It's tough watching them, and activity levels will also fall as more cows in the herd are gone pregnant, you know, so they're not going to be pulling, and you know, the same level of activity won't be there, the same level of hormones won't be around. So sure, the whole thing gets difficult as it goes on.
And I know we've talked about it before again, but I mean, I was talking just to two lads this week, and they're actually going using more beef AI as opposed to beef stock bulls. They said, "Jeepers, we tried the stock bulls before, and they can't keep them right on the feet," we'll say, with the walking, you know, because I mean, they're like, some of them, you're depending on the scale and size of the herd and the farms, etc. Some of them are walking kind of 3, 4, 5 kilometers a day, you know, the kind of a way, like, so it can be hard on stock bulls.
Definitely, Jack. And as you go up, and as the herd sizes get bigger, like anything over 150, 160 cows, just the bulls aren't able for it. Like, and I mean, it's just a reflection of the fact that these bulls are a ton weight. They're not used to walking, so their feet aren't, you know, capable. They're only asked to walk that for a couple of weeks in the year. And for the rest of the time, they're sitting in a field, you know. So they're just not bred for it. They're not capable of doing it. And they give up, you know. They get lame and they get some sort of an injury, and they just get completely lazy. Just wrecked, I suppose, more so. Wrecked from bulling cows and wrecked from the walking. So, yeah, I mean, the AI and that situation just makes life, you know, it's just, you're guaranteed that, you know, not guaranteed, there's no guarantees. And reading, but you know, you present the cow for AI, she's inseminated, and you know that, you know, the semen is going to meet the egg, whether it refuses or not is a different story. But like with the bull, you just can't take that chance for those larger herds, because if the bull is flat, it's flat.
I know previously some guys were saying to kind of sort out the bulls and don't bring them for the walk, you know what I mean, leave them in the paddocks and all this kind of stuff. But you're into safety concerns then, depending on who's bringing in and out the cows, etc., and all that kind of thing. And on family farms, that can be tricky too.
Yeah, I've heard that said, Jack, but I've never seen it. Big thing in New Zealand, you know, they train, you know, for the first couple of days, they train the bulls to stay in the paddock. Like, I mean, I don't know how I'd love to see it happening, but I've never seen it being done, you know. And like, it would be dangerous, you have to say. And you know, particularly over there, it's mostly those scrub bulls that they have, you know. There's no beef bulls over there. But look, I mean, for me, I'd say that's not going to work every time either, because if cows are moving paddock, the bulls are going to have to go with them. So the safety element of it is a big risk, and that's the same now for vasectomized bulls as well, you know. So there's definitely a safety element of it, as well as the whole, you know, functionality of these bulls.
Yeah, I see you were down on the Shannock farm there, just outside Bandon. This is the farm zero carbon, I suppose, farm. Aidan, like, I mean, talk to me just first of all, before we get on to that aspect of it, I suppose, the production type of system that they're running down there, etc., and that kind of thing.
Yeah, sure, they're running a very much a low-cost grass-based system, Jack. They're this is, I think, their 11th season now milking cows. So they started in 2011. It's owned by the West Cork Co-ops, so the Shannock Estates, which is owned by the West Cork Co-ops, own the land. As John McNamara, the Teagasc man that's kind of overseeing it and the Teagasc side of stuff, he said, "Is, you know, Shannock is like the uncle, you know." So the farm company is renting the land off Shannock, even though Shannock are kind of partners in the farm as well. So he's saying it's like renting the farm off the uncle. They have to pay full labor costs, full land rental costs, and, you know, run the farm then as best they can after that. So they're milking about 250 cows. Kevin Ahern is the farm manager. He's been there since the start, you know, excellent farm manager, and he's got help in as well, you know, full-time and part-time help as and when it's needed. So that's the system. They're feeding, growing about 14 and a half tons of grass, feeding 500 kilos a meal, and generally doing about 430 kilos of mink solids. Last year, now, you know, one of the things that came up in the walk was last year their mink solids production was a bit down than that. From that, they did about 397 kilos or something per cow. So disappointed with that level of performance. But they're tracking to do something similar to other years this year. So, yeah.
What did they, sorry, in what did they put down that lower production to? Like, did they, had they, were there any specifics? Like, did they feed a lot less or anything like that? Or
so they didn't feed any less, they said. Normal level of feeding. One of the things that the only thing that they say that they've identified is that they, looking back, the weather was very poor in April. So 21st of April was a shocking bad week, and cows obviously dipped because weather was poor. And normally they dip, but they'd bounce back again, but they never bounced back last year, is what they say. They stayed at that level. And they're saying just they never, you know, they're prior to that time, prior to that day, the pinpoints of that day, they were tracking as normal. One of the things they've said is that when they look back at what the cows were grazing, they weren't getting their full intakes of grass. Yeah. So they were basing, so the weather was poor enough down there now for a lot of the spring, let's say. Mm. And they when they track back, you know, what the area their cows were grazing per day and how much grass is in it, they wouldn't have been getting their allocations, the correct allocation. So they're saying they're, you know, they're potentially underfed. I suppose what Kevin is saying that he was looking at the residuals the whole time, and the residuals are fine. But just because the residuals are fine doesn't necessarily mean that the cows are getting well fed if the weather was poor. So because April and May were wettish months, he's saying that's a factor. So that's all they can identify, really. But performance, you'd have to say, Jack, you know, 11 years in, 430 yeah. kilos of mixed solids, like there's a lot of herds now doing a lot more than that.
Yeah, that's where I was kind of going to come to. Like, I mean, like it's not a, now maybe there has been a kind of a year effect there, maybe, but I mean, it's as you say, 10 or 11 years in, you can't blame it all on the fact that they were all heifers. And I think all that herd were all heifers starting off whenever that was in 2010 or 2011, like, you know, so it's not a maturity piece, like, you know, and so is where do they see kind of the production going? And I know it's not the be all and end all, obviously, you know what I mean? Like, no, but, you know, no. Still it's an important one all the same.
It is. Like, I mean, they're saying if they did an extra 30 kilos of mink solids, that would be an extra 30 or 40,000 euros added to the bottom line of the overall farm, which is substantial, you know. Mm. So, you know, obviously that's presuming you're not going to increase costs with the extra mink solids, which I think is fair to say. But I suppose one of the things that they have identified is that there was a big focus on the 6-week in-calf rate or 6-week calving rate. And a lot of the time then, you know, they're saying that maybe they haven't bred the best cows in the herd to dairy to get the replacements. They've just, you know, done 3 or 4 weeks of dairy AI, and what heifer calves were born that period were the heifer calves that they then bred and entered the herd the following year. So there's not great selection in terms of, you know, the good cows aren't necessarily being bred to dairy. The other thing that they said is there is very little. One of the targets for the long number of years was on having a low replacement rate. So obviously the heifers being contract rearing, so carrying the fewer heifers possible will lower your contract rearing costs. But the I suppose one of the things there, they had 8 or 9% of cows empty between mastitis and lameness and other bits of these are going to get another about probably 9% of cows going. Mm-hmm. So 18% replacement rate. You've no space within that to cull cows for, you know, just poor performing cows. So that's possibly another factor. These are just, you know, these are reasons and excuses, I suppose, why. But they're worth exploring. Like, so now genetically the herd is very strong. Like, it's 191 euros of an EBI. And EBI has risen over time, but production hasn't increased in line with that. So, you know, it's disappointing on the whole. Look, the cows were looking well the other day. I was down there last Friday, and you know, they were looking well, working hard, I'd say, and grass quality wasn't brilliant. So it's not a Rolls Royce farm. Like, you know, it's okay, it's in Bandon. It's a fine block of land, but it's quite exposed. And, it's tricky, yeah. You know, it wouldn't be the best, you'd have to say, like, that's out there.
And in terms of the environmental side of it, Aidan, you know, so we've talked about the production there and the system. In terms of the environmental side of it and trying to get to this net zero job, like what's changing or what's happening down there?
So there's effectively two projects at play. There's the Farm Zero C, the carbon project, we call it, and the farm project, which has been running as normal. And they're separate but together, you know. So generally they're not trying to change the farm system dramatically. The only thing that they've done, you know, they're using native grains, which isn't a big deal. They've got, you know, in terms of impacting on the farm, that is. And they've, I suppose they're measuring more what's going on. So the farm, the carbon team are measuring more what's happening in the farm and putting figures around it. Look, they've a bit more multi-species in, not overly sold in it. They're about, you know, about 3 or 4% of the farm is being sold to multi-species every year. The other, you know, the other 6 or 7% to make up 10% of the annual reseeding is with grass and white clover. My feeling is they prefer the grass and white clover, but they're going to keep going with the multi-species just to see how it performs over time. So every year they're going to have one or two paddocks of multi-species. But that's not going to, they don't think it's a game changer, to be honest with you. That's basically it, Jack. So they're, you know, the average herd in Ireland is around 1 kilo of CO2 equivalent per kilo of milk produced. Down there today, they're 0.75. So they are low, a good bit lower than the average. That's not taken into account sequestration. If you took into account sequestration, they'd be back to around 0.65. Which is, you know, it's good, but it's nowhere near zero currently. You need to do something around methane in order to, that'll probably drop it, you know, that'll bring it back to about 0.25, I think. You know, it's nearly half a kilo of carbon equivalence is related to methane, approximately. So, you know, and look, that maybe there's a silver bullet for that in time. It's not there yet. And after that, you know, there's...
Yeah, sorry, they're not using any of the feed additives just yet, are they?
No, and look, we haven't got any, you know, didn't give an indication whether they're going to either or not yet. Like, so no, that's not happening. I suppose on the electricity side of stuff, you know, they're putting in solar panels, they have a wind turbine down there that's generating a bit of power. Yeah, sure, they're all small things that are going to, you know, they're hoping they're going to make up the difference. Like, and I mean, even with the feed additives, they're probably not going to get down to zero either. It's going to reduce the methane emissions. It's not going to bring it to zero. So yeah, look, I mean, that's a work in progress. It's interesting, you know. It's a very interesting area, but it's I suppose for me, going away from it, it just highlights the challenges that this is the farmer that's doing everything, you know, that's by the book in the sense of the way the farmer's being run, and also, you know, you've got they've the experts from UCD and Carberry and all the rest working there as well. And, you know, the best they can do at the moment after a year and a bit of working it is 0.75. So a long way to go to get to zero, you'd have to say.
Yeah, and there's some good farmers that are not particularly on a kind of a change agenda. They're kind of, you know, if the average is one, there's good farmers right around Ireland at the 0.75, 0.8. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that definitely. Yeah, there's definitely a range there, for sure. Yeah, so... Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, 0.75 is not bad by any means either. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's yeah, that's where it's at, I suppose. You know, that's the challenge for the industry in order to get that down lower. Jack, if production increased, you know, if they got that extra 30 or 40 kilos of zinc solids, that would probably have a big bearing on it, because you're diluting it with, you know, you're obviously the total amount of carbon being released won't change much, but you're diluting it with more output.
And it's also fair to say that globally, like, that 0.75 is as good as it gets anywhere in the world. Like, it's fair to say.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I mean, 1.5 would be more normal in terms of milk produced elsewhere. So, yeah, for sure.
And Aidan, just the native grain piece you talked about. So effectively, whatever volume of concentrate they're feeding, it's made from Irish cereal grains. Like, we'll say that. What are they using as a protein source in those grains, or are they?
We didn't really get into that in a whole lot of detail. It's coming locally. There's mills there locally. It's beans is the main source of protein in that, Jack. And then you know your barley and wheat and oats and your other whole grains, I suppose, that are included in it. But it's beans is the main source of protein in that. But the farm wouldn't need that much protein, like, because it's a spring calving system. It's a dry farm, so they get out the grass early. 12% protein would be fine. So the inclusion of beans would be quite low. Like, straight barley would probably get you by most of the year there, you know?
Yeah. Aidan, I'll finish up with this, the fixed milk price schemes. So we've seen some movement this week in terms of, like, I suppose we had Lakeland coming out late last week with their top up for the fixed milk price pool per se. So they're putting 8 cents a litre or 7 pence in Northern Ireland onto the fixed milk price volumes. You had Glanbia, I suppose, creating this piece where they kind of created a special once-off kind of April bonus on all milk so that the gap wouldn't widen any further between the base milk price and the current fixed milk price, like we'll say, or the fixed milk price that some farmers had pulled in on. And you saw Kerry doing something similar to that. They've put a top-up piece on 5 cents a litre top-up on the fixed milk volumes. Is there much talk among farmers of these schemes are of what processors are doing, or is there guys exposed, we'll say, that are still very angry with the whole piece and how it has kind of evolved over the last kind of couple of months?
Sure, there are, and it depends. It's very regional, Jack. Like, so, you know, you mentioned Lakeland there, and they've done great work, but I haven't got a call, you know, from one Lakeland supplier who's affected by fixed milk price scheme, because there's very few of them there. Whereas Glandia and the North Corks, it's much, much more farmers affected, because many more of them have a lot of their milk fixed in it, some up to very high levels of fixed milk. You know, in hindsight, crazy high levels of the amount of milk that they fixed, which isn't right. Like, it wasn't right that the day they went into it, but they're there, you know, and now they can't get out of it. So they're under savage financial pressure. So yeah, they are very concerned about it. And the 3 cents that they've added for April, you know, for that Glanbia have added for April, won't mean much to them, really. Like, to be honest with you, they're so badly affected.
Yeah.
But for the most part, Jack, you're talking 25 or 30% of farmers have about 30% of, well, between 25% of their milk fixed. So it's not a massive, but it's still substantial for some players.
It is. Like, I mean, the one piece that I was talking to, the Glanbia piece, was that, you know, in that last fixed milk price scheme, I'm not sure if it's not the most recent one, obviously, but the one of the previous ones was the 3-year fixed milk price scheme. They went for a certain volume and they actually got the volume they actually subscribed for, you know, and kind of all along they had been kind of subscribing for a volume and getting half of it. And this particular time for the 3-year scheme, they actually got the volume that they subscribed for. Like, so, you know, I mean, they got hit with a large volume in the fixed milk price scheme, and that's really burning some of them.
Yeah, because these schemes, Jack, were always oversubscribed. You know, historically, they're always oversubscribed, and then you had a better chance of getting into each scheme if you were in previous schemes. So they had a kind of a marking system in order to get into it. So a lot of farmers would have went way over the top in terms of, if they wanted, we say, 20% of their milk in the pool, they'd applied for 40%. And they might have got 10%, you know, in that's what happened traditionally. So this time then, they would have went, if they looked for 20%, they might have applied for 40%, but they got 40%. So it's, and you know, multiplied up, maybe they might have already had, you know, they were in previous schemes as well, so they would have had more. Maybe some of those schemes were already in play, and so there was a carryover over time period there as well for those. Like, it's hard to say. Like, it's affecting a small number of people, as we've said, relatively small number of farmers, but they're really badly affected. And I suppose the question is, are co-ops like Glanbia and Lakeland going to follow, or Glanbia and North Cork going to follow the Lakeland approach? I suppose, look, 5 cents from Kerry is a lot better than the 3 cents from Glanbia, but again, there's no certainty. Are that going to continue on into subsequent months? Like, if it doesn't, you know, there's just no certainty there for the farmers, I'd say. Look, it's definitely a help compared to where it was, but
yeah,
at least Lakeland, you know, you've got good certainty. You know what, you can budget now for the rest of the season, knowing what they've done.
Yeah.
But the cost of fixing that, I suppose, in Glanbia is much greater, because there's so much of their milk affected by it.
Yeah. And the Kerry piece also has the fact that you have to tie in for 2023, you know. So again, farmers that have tied in, the last thing they want to do is to tie in for more milk into 2023, into a kind of a flawed system. So that Kerry piece is going to kind of not upset people, but I mean, it won't. Some of them won't take to it as kindly as you might expect. Aidan, listen, we'll leave it there for this week. Thanks for that, and I'll chat to you again next week. Folks, earlier I had a chat with David Corbett from Grassland Agro, and one of his points was that, listen, maybe dry stock farmers should be thinking about cutting silage maybe a week or 10 days earlier to up the quality. Let's have a listen. David, good to have you on the show. You're in out of the weather, I see. You have the coat on, like, you know, talk to me. It's very variable around the country, isn't it?
I am, Jack, in out of the weather. Very variable. I'm actually in Bandon at the moment on the way back from Clonakilty. So, a nice soft day here in Bandon, but very mild. As you can imagine, Jack, you know, across the country, grass is flying.
I was just going to say, it's growthy type weather, isn't it, David? Like, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Like, you know, right across the country now, it's, you know, there's growth rates in excess of 80, you'd say, per day on a lot of farms.
There is a course, Jack. Yeah, there is a course. Grow rates are well up and over 80. Yeah, and look, as you said, and it's often a term at home, it's soft weather, it's growthy weather, you know. But like that, Jack, you know, it's, look, a lot of variables behind that, you know, depending on what your growth rate is like. I suppose soil fertility and the amount of nitrogen going out is a big one. I suppose, look, if there was nitrogen put out earlier on the year, look, there is residual effects of that nitrogen. And you probably can see that there now on the fields that have got a heavier application. But the other thing, Jack, is back to the simple things again, back to the lime, the pH, having those right. But look, even around the growth rate, Jack, even response to nitrogen and stuff, like, you know, trying to tailor that on the farm, maybe to the more responsive paddocks, you know, giving them an extra push of nitrogen. They're the hungry paddocks, so you're going to see the response on them, especially with the year that's in it and the price of inputs in that.
David, like, they must be kind of nearly ready to cut, second cut down around Clonakilty, are they? Like, they're always that little bit ahead of us. Like, you know, I presume, like, there's lots of grass around down back that neck of the woods. Did you see much of it today? Like?
Yeah, there is, of course, Jack. An awful lot of silage cut, an awful lot of first cuts taken out. From North Cork all the way down along. A lot of silage cut last weekend. And look, I suppose just looking at the weather, it's not looking too favourable now this weekend coming, and probably a lot more silage to cut. But I know yourself, Jack, and the Waterford and Cork crowd is not going to bother you this weekend, because you'll be elsewhere.
We will, and we'll be interested in what's happening in both places. So we will at the same time. But in terms of that silage piece, David, like, it's fair to say that from around me here in North Tipperary, what has come out so far is surplus paddocks, or maybe ground that wasn't grazed, we'll say, earlier in the year. There's very little, I suppose, I call it dry stock lads, that have much silage cut yet. Am I right, kind of, is my piece reflective of what's happening around the country?
Definitely, Jack. That would be the general consensus, you know. And probably what happens on dry stock farms is, like, it's very set, you know. You kind of have nearly a set day, you let out stock, you have a set day, you close up, and you have a set day, you cut the first cut, you know, and that's kind of standard, you know, and that's fair enough. But I suppose conditions were good this year. I think stock were out a bit earlier, and silage ground maybe got a longer growing season. But just on that, Jack, look, especially for the year that's in it, Jack, there's a massive potential there to cut better quality silage. And could be just, you know, your set date might be the first or the second week in June or something. Pull that back to the last day in May or the first day in June. And what that can do for your silage quality is unbelievable, Jack.
Would you be worried then of nitrogen like levels, we'll say, for some of those? You're specifically thinking maybe of some of those dry stock lads that haven't cut anything yet, are you?
Yeah, definitely, Jack. And look, I wouldn't, to be honest, Jack, because look, I think the general consensus around the country, Jack, is that the amount of nitrogen put out on first cuts is back anyway. Look, if you have a month, you know, 30 days of a close period, you know, that'll still swallow up 60 units of nitrogen, you know. To be honest, I don't know, is there much more? Probably 70 units, probably tops, like, so you're talking maybe 40 days, you know, there's no problem. Yes. So that's only five to 6 weeks, but just, you know, cutting maybe a week or 10 days. Look, you can get the silage tested, get the standing grass, get the sugars and the nitrates done, and that's a key indicator. Very cheap to do it, you know, but a very, very simple tool and quick indicator. But on that, Jack, you know, getting good quality silage, good protein content in the silage, good quality protein and as much energy as possible. Because just even thinking of the grass plant as it's grown and the first cut silage standing there, Jack, It's a solar panel, you know. It's a solar panel, and it's I suppose converting energy in the plant, you know, to grow that plant. And it's back to the old terms, you know, grass grows grass. Like, so, you know, you want to try and cut as soon as you can and get as good of a crop as you can.
I suppose the dilemma for some farmers, David, is, of course, that they hear all this talk of maybe feed being short during the winter, etc., and that kind of thing, and they're saying, jeepers, I'll let it bulk up that extra week or 10 days, and especially with the cost of the contractor and the cost of diesel, etc., and all that kind of thing, they want to dilute it over more volume. But what I'm getting from you is that the quality is more important rather than the volume.
Definitely, Jack. The quality is going to be the key. And you know, fair enough. Like we're for dry stock farmers, we're probably going to have to supplement with some quantity of meal, and that's fair enough. But Jack, I'd argue that we're still going to grow the same amount of grass. And I know where you're coming from, you know, cut a bulky crop, but like the sooner you cut, the quicker you're going to have regrowths on that silage ground, and then the quicker you can get in for your second cut. And and you know, I suppose with that second cut, if you can get in there quicker, you know that you've better scope, and it's a lot easier because there is a variable layer of climate when you get into the back end of the year, and so potential rainfall, and it's so hard to get out that second cut and stuff. So, but yeah, you know, just look, quality is going to be a key one, because look, it's the primary feed, Jack. You know, that grass silage.
Yeah. You know. So what you're saying is maybe like if you had your mind set on the middle of June, like to get that bulk and to get that volume and to help dilute your costs, you're saying maybe consider, if the weather is right, a week earlier or 10 days earlier even, that listen, go and take a slightly lighter crop. But as you say, you'll make it up in the couple of weeks after it.
Definitely, Jack, definitely. And look, as part of the Grass and Agro Soil Sustainability Programme, we are doing nitrates on silage. If that is potentially going to be an issue, you know, we are doing that for our customers. And that is an indicator, you know, and it happens around the country. There is nitrogen in first cut silage, and farmers have to do it, have to leave it off for a few days, possibly 5 to 7 days, whatever it will be.
Yeah.
But that is it's very good information for a farmer to get just for that insurance and peace of mind.
What I meant to ask you about before, David, was this: you have a product in terms of it's to help to reduce the worm burdens in cattle. Like, talk to me about that product you have. Is it a garlic based product?
Yeah, so garlic rich, Jack. Yeah, garlic rich product. So Nutri-V Fight. Is the product. It's a mineral block, Jack. So I suppose just the components in it. So there's antioxidants in it. So I suppose the antioxidants are coming from plant extracts, but also I suppose just from minerals themselves, are antioxidants themselves. So what they're doing is actually reducing the buildup and worm burden within an animal. But also, I suppose, reducing the impact that those worms will have. And look, it's not going to eliminate, I suppose, buildup of worms. It's going to reduce that burden because, look, to be fair, Jack, there probably is overdosing happening on farm and resistance building up. And that is a particular issue, you know, when you come back to growth rates and thrive and production. So just being more mindful around that. And I know Adam Woods did touch on it there last week, Jack, on your own TikToks.
Yeah. And is that for cattle only, David?
No, so cattle, sheep, dairy, heifers, horses. Look, every range of animal, really, you know, they're all susceptible to worms and to build up of okay. worms.
And so you're saying there's a preventative piece as well as kind of a call it to an extent, a cure rate. So, I mean, would you combine leaving out that leak with fecal egg counts? Is that how you're thinking that it should be managed?
Yeah, so that's exactly what we're doing at the moment, Jack. So I suppose we're selling the Nutri-V Fight block onto farm, and I suppose we're offering fecal egg counts to farmers. So we're taking fecal egg counts for the farmers, taking samples and sending them off to the lab. But I suppose we're incorporating the farmer, ourselves, and the vet. Into that decision making, you know, if the animal needs to be dosed, it needs to be dosed, and if there is a worm burden there, that has to be, a plan put in place for that. But I suppose what we're trying to do is I suppose map and trying to see if there is a burden, a worm burden within animals, and if there is a build up there. And I suppose how we can manage that. And look, I suppose we've done just a bit of our own work there last year on a few trial farms, on one particular farm in County Mayo, in Westport, Martin Keaton. And Martin was using it throughout the summer period with calves, and Martin didn't dose the calves at all over the summer period. They got an initial warmer when they went out to grass full time. And that was it for the year. So Martin had a very good experience with it, Jack. Yeah. So
typically, David, how will you take, just for kind of in terms of the bug, simple practical stuff, in terms of how are you taking them samples, we say, when you land onto a farm or onto Martin's farm, we say?
Yeah, so look, Jack, you need to be taking a sample as you're watching the animal in the field, you know. So literally as the animal
doing the business, like, yeah.
Doing the business, so you're taking a sample in the field straight away, and that's key. The other way of doing it is bringing them into the yard and let them settle a while and you take them at random. But look, a random sample, and look, what we be doing, Jack, is if the farmer does think that there might be particular animals that there is an issue with, and you know they might be a bit loose or a bit scoury, take those samples, because they're the ones that potentially have the problem, and if there's a problem with those animals, you know, potentially it's in the herd then.
Right, folks, that's it for another week. Thanks for watching and indeed for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Aidan and Darren, and also to David Corbett from Grassland Agro for giving his thoughts on what's happening down the south of the country this week. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcasts. Shout out once again to our supporters, AXA, Grassland Agro and ESB Networks, for helping us to make this show happen. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and stay farming.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.